This podcast is for investment professionals only.
Hello and welcome to February's Rich Pickings, Fidelity's Asset Allocation Podcast. I'm Richard Edgar, Editor-in-Chief, and with me are some of the multi-asset team looking unperturbed by the market gyrations of recent weeks. Is it all a front? Well, we'll find out shortly. Joining me are Charlotte Harrington, Markets Analyst and...
A flautist.
Excellent. Perhaps you'll play us out as we go. Making his debut, though, is Rahul Srivatsa, Portfolio Manager and Head of the Quant Research Team in Multi-Asset. And if you have time to do anything else, what else?
He used to be a cricketer.
Any particular level?
Under 16 level, but back in India, playing for my state.
Excellent. Okay. Almost professional. And James Bateman, CIO of Multi-Asset and...
Former librarian and lover of the Dewey Decimal System.
Aren't we all? Welcome to you all. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. And after months of talking about it, we finally saw a correction in markets at the start of the month. And it was a proper correction, with US stocks dropping more than 10% from the peak they reached in January. Now, the sky hasn't fallen on our heads, but as we record this on St. Valentine's Day, has the affair turned sour? I'd like to know, first of all, what was the mood like on the floor as stocks tumbled not once, but several days in a row? James?
You know, Richard, I think, you know, on the one hand, watching markets decline is never enjoyable. On the other hand, I think everyone was expecting it, was ready for it, and actually felt it was a resumption of something more healthy. The momentum, the speed of upward moves in stocks in January was in a way more terrifying as an investor than the downward move that came afterwards.
Because this was pretty speedy on the way down.
Sort of kicked back
and took it in your stride.
You monitor, you observe. What you don't do is knee-jerk trading. And I think, you know, the sign of a talented investor is the ability to weather storms through the experience of having seen it before, and maybe at the margin tinker with portfolios where appropriate, but quite often say, I know I'm positioned correctly for the medium term, I'm going to use this as an opportunity when the opportunity arises. So when you see a floor in markets, you might look to buy, but what you don't do is panic sell on the way down.
So would I have detected even a slight increase in the murmuring on the market?
You'd have heard a lot more discussion. And I think, you know...
What are you discussing?
Well, exactly at what point we think that the market's likely to bottom out at. Well, obviously always retesting our thesis. So are we right to still like equities? Are we right to say this is not a bear market? And actually, so it's a constant discussion, really reaffirming what we think and you know, pushing people to act as devil's advocate to argue the other way. Because clearly we have to test our theses constantly.
Is this in a sort of council of war? You gather people around in a meeting room, or is it as you saunter past them on the floor?
Mix of both things. You know, the portfolio managers all sat together around desks. There is constant dialogue and discussion there, and clearly the volume of that discussion, both in terms actually of loudness and in terms of quantity, probably does increase. You know, in times of market stress, but equally, fortuitously, the asset allocation group fell at quite a good time. Our weekly markets meeting definitely became more animated and had more active participants. But that's what you'd expect in times like this.
Charlotte, do you get roped in as the markets analyst? Are you?
Yes, I think I'm generally part of the discussions, and I guess what we're really looking for is things that maybe stand out to us as a bit unusual given the backdrop. So I'd highlight here actually bond yields. You would have expected, given the risk-off move in equity markets, that bond yields would have fallen, but they didn't. And that tells you a little bit about the driving forces behind some of these moves, or at least the very initial move, which is this slight worry from market participants that inflation's coming through, and that the first part of the move started around both unit labour costs and average hourly earnings in the US. So it sort of tells you a little bit about what caused the move, and then that was exacerbated by some technical factors.
Well, driven by data, first of all, and yes, we'll come on to that now, because in the media, at least, it seemed that algorithmic trading was getting the blame for some of this. Now, Rahul, as a quant yourself, is that fair?
I think there are sort of nuances to it, and I think blaming quant trading overall into what's happened is probably a bit of an extreme. If you were to look at what are the quant strategies out there, so you have technical short vol traders and strategies, then you have systematic CTA type strategies, risk parity and whatnot. But what happened on Monday was quite a technical correction which we saw, and that originated in the VIX trading. And even if you look at how it's evolved over the past week, it's been quite US-centric in terms of how things have panned out. risk on assets haven't performed as you would think given S&P performance. So it seems to suggest that there's some sort of protection around other risk on assets. So the contagion which you would expect hasn't quite worked out.
Yeah, because you mentioned VIX, often referred to as the fear index, and yet there hasn't been much real human fear. I mean, you know, James here is painting a very relaxed picture, a very sort of grown-up surveying of what's been going on in the market. So it's slightly odd, isn't it? It's not quite what we would expect.
Yeah, so I think it's quite a strange correction which we are looking at. And if you were to compare this to 2015, when there were China slowdown fears, there were more widespread concern in financial markets. So if you think of volatility targeting as a concept, it's basically a mathematical concept which says if the volatility in a given market is trending up or down, you'll have to respond accordingly by either de-risking or ramping up risk. So what's happened in the past week is that volatility has increased, particularly in the US equities. Therefore, you will see these sort of strategies actually having higher risk. Therefore, they will say, or the algorithm would say, we need to de-risk from this point onwards. So that results in some sort of persistent selling.
Ripples that keep coming.
These strategies are price takers. So they would respond to these events rather than creating them.
So yeah, absolutely. And these strategies are really sort of exacerbating the moves is really what we're looking at. So exactly as Rahul said, as volatility picks up, it's a bit higher than maybe that they want to target. So they have to move to reflect that. Mm. And to come to your point about fear, I think that's definitely something that came up in several of our meetings, and it's where the differentiation between the portfolio managers comes in that some people are happy to buy on this correction, other people aren't so happy to buy because they don't see any fear, and actually you really want to buy when you think there's panic and fear, and that tends to, you know that you've sort of hit a bottom.
And I think that does play to the point. We're all cognizant there could be a further leg down as fear becomes more endemic. The challenge with this correction is, and we touched earlier on what caused it, but fundamentally it was caused by continuing good data. You know, the economic situation is good because the macroeconomic situation is good. We might see more inflation, therefore we might see more rate rises, therefore the market got worried. But it's quite difficult to have that much fear coming through from something that is actually a decent rosy backdrop. The China slowdown fears of a few years ago, as you referenced, Rahul, by definition were a more panic-driven sell-off when people thought things were deteriorating.
And I think the other thing actually to add here is the fiscal deficit in the US. So even if you are someone who doesn't worry particularly about inflation, you might think that there's upward pressure on bond yields from this extra supply of government bonds in the States. And that at some point starts to weigh on GDP growth, and it also starts to increase debt service costs of corporates and households. So there are different forces that are driving yields, but what we know is that equity markets don't really like high yields, especially if it's real yields.
So it's a very different picture then than it was or it's a different way of looking at the same picture, really, because maybe the fundamentals haven't particularly changed that much over the past month or two. And yet, despite all this, you all gathered in the asset allocation group and there was no change. James, explain yourself.
So you paint a picture of us almost being lazy in our lack of change, Richard. So thank you for that.
Because as you always point out, no change is an active decision.
Indeed it is. And there was a great deal of activity around this decision. But let me talk about this from two angles. One is, I think what we have gone from is a situation where we said we were approaching late cycle, maybe in late cycle, to one we know we are in late cycle. And I think that is quite a big shift in what we're thinking. This increase in volatility, the first real correction for some time, does feel that we're not at the end of the bull market, but we're at the beginning of the end. And that beginning of the end might be a few months, it might be a couple of years. But nonetheless, there's a reasonable reason to assume that's where we are.
And because the patterns are now changing.
Patterns are now changing. Volatility is like to increase. And so I would say that whilst the headline that we're overweight equities, slightly underweight fixed income, broadly neutral cash hasn't changed, within that some things have. So first of all, we are gradually increasing fixed income, and particularly US treasuries, as a defensive hedge in the portfolio. Secondly, whilst we are still overweight equities, there is some internal debate over how much we want to be and whether, at what point we want to be buying. As Charlotte said, some PMs are buying now or have bought already. Some are waiting for a slightly lower entry point into the market. But also within equities, whilst our region allocations are broadly the same, there's a couple of things. One is I think there's an increasing, just on a regional basis, consideration of buying Japan. But more importantly, within the overall market, there's a growing consensus we're going to see a change in leadership. So we're going to shift from what's led the market up so far to something else. And that really is a rotation into more traditional value areas of the market. What does that mean for positioning? It means changing the stocks. It means not having the FANGs and stocks like that as large weights in your portfolio, the tech stocks. And actually, most importantly to me, in a way, despite the fact we're not changing our position, we've got a two-way hedge on. Because those stocks haven't moved much, particularly in the last year. So you're in a position where if the market stays flat or falls, you're actually pretty well immunised because your stocks haven't moved much up, they're not going to move much down. If you're right in your thesis, there's probably a change of leadership that leads the last leg of the bull market and you get a good return. So in either way, by rotating within equities but remaining overweight equities, you ought to do well whatever happens in the market.
Well, James, we're actually... just as we're recording this, getting some data in from the US where inflation is slightly stronger than expected, retail sales and auto sales are down. I suppose the question is, as we build, you know, more of a picture of what's going on, in particular in the US, but elsewhere in the world as well, what happens next? What is this data going to be telling us, Charlotte?
Well, I think it's definitely possible that this is confirming some people's worries about inflation. And for me, what's been very interesting over the past week and will continue to be interesting is how policymakers respond to this. So far, policymakers have said this has been a very normal episode of events. Volatility was too low in the equity market. Dudley referred to the moves as small potatoes. And markets don't like it when central bankers are very relaxed about these things. And so for me, a strong inflation print could see upward pressure on yields maintained for a while and potentially hit stocks, at least in the near term, until you get some kind of reassurance from those policymakers.
And Rahul, where do you fall in this camp? Are you relaxed about it at the moment or less so?
Up until the print came out.
Oh, really? how has that changed your views?
So I think my view was that what's happening in markets is more of a technical correction. So we will see some pullback in terms of what the performance have been.
But here's some real data that changes that.
So I would just have to monitor how this evolves over the course of the day, because what really matters is how market digests this information.
I think the point is, if we're seeing inflation tick up and we're seeing retail sales down, mm-hmm. that is not the time to tighten. And therefore, actually, I do, you know, my view, and I know Charlotte and I haven't always agreed on this, but my view is that central banks are going to be slow in raising rates or slower than the market expects, but still be in an upward trajectory gradually. And I think that is very healthy for markets. And provided that is what comes out in terms of what they say and what they do, it's a bull case for markets. Clearly, if they over-tighten, or if they decide they cannot tighten at all because things get so bad, those are both very bad bear cases, but they're not my expectation.
We just have to watch out for Fed speak and whatnot. So it's more a question of, can they give you any support?
And I suppose this is what's going to characterise this year, that suddenly people are going to start moving on data. They're going to start trading on data in a way that people have become so sanguine for as long as I can remember anyway. Is it going to become more jumpy? Are we going to see spasms either way?
Definitely. I mean, I think this is going to be a more difficult time to invest, frankly, but also a time where skilled portfolio management really matters, because it is going to be more volatile. The market's probably going to overreact to a lot of relatively small bits of data as it tries to piece together the jigsaw that is the entire macroeconomic and market backdrop. And because of that, trading at the right times, probably being gradual in your evolution of your portfolio, and not at any point either becoming overly pessimistic or overly optimistic on one or two bits of data. That to my mind is how you succeed in these sorts of markets.
Right, okay, we're out of time. So time now for our hilarious parlour game, Hot Cakes and Hot Potatoes. What is selling like hot cakes, but what would you drop like a hot potato? Rahul, let me come to you first of all. Your hot cake.
It would be buying US equities. Goes back down to the technical correction which we saw. And I believe the fundamental picture is really strong.
So there's value at the moment there.
Correct.
Okay, and what about your hot potato? What would you drop? What's not a good thing to hold on to?
For me, it would be Italian equities, and that's a large part of that is due to the upcoming election, and there's not enough risk premium actually priced in. So I think there's probably some scope for downside risk there.
The Silvio sell.
Yeah.
Charlotte, let me come to you.
Hot cake would be, and I'm actually seeing these as a bit of a pair, so the Japanese yen. It's a risk-off currency, but also there's anticipation building around the BOJ and whether or not they are going to move away from easy monetary policy.
And the other side of that then, your
the
hot potato?
The other side of that is sterling. I think we've got a long way to go with these Brexit negotiations, and the consumer and housing data is still pretty sluggish, and inflation staying quite sticky, so I don't think we're past the real wage squeeze yet in the UK.
Oh dear. James, cheer me up. Hotcakes.
Difficult to cheer you up, Richard. I think my hotcake's got to be value equities. I think, as I said, that
this is your rotation.
It's a rotation into these stocks. I think they really could lead the market up in the next leg, and stocks that haven't moved much in the last year or more have phenomenal upside potential versus those that led the market previously. So I think that rotation's important. On the other side, the hot potato, you know, there's a lot of things that look quite unattractive at the moment. I'm actually going to go with European debt, which I've probably said before, but of all areas in the debt market, I think that's the one that's got the biggest fundamental issues. So yeah, avoid European debt.
Avoid like the plague. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for your assessment there. And that's it. We're out of time. I hope that's given you an insight into the thinking behind this month's asset allocation. If you'd like more detail, it's published in full on our website. And if you'd like to discuss anything we've covered, just ask your Fidelity contact. Thanks very much to my guests, Charlotte, Rahul and James. And thanks to you for listening. We'll be back in March. But for now, goodbye.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied on by private investors. This podcast is provided for information purposes only and is intended only for the person or entity to which it is sent. It must not be reproduced or circulated to any other party without prior permission of Fidelity. The value of investments can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. For other important legal notices, please see our website or the Fidelity SoundCloud or iTunes apps.